Main bar and restaurant in Jeffersonville. Comforting American fare in a cozy neighborhood atmosphere. Menus and takeout orders available online. TavernOnMainNY.com. From the Narrowsburg Union, featuring information about regional attractions and activities, along with products by the region's artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen at Catskills Curated. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
It's the local edition with news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, ready to do our Wednesday thing here, which means we've got James B. Huntington coming up with the latest on jobs and the economy on Work Shift Live. And we'll be starting with last week's jobs report. Another jobs report came out since we last talked to James Huntington. So we'll start there when we talk to him. Coming up in the second half of the program, but right now it's the latest on local news. And for our local news roundup this week, once again, it's Liam Mayo from the River Reporter. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Kind of warm. It was a warm day. Did you get outside at all?
Yeah, it was pretty scorching out there.
good deal. So where should we start here? How about the the regional food bank in northeastern New York? What are they up to?
Yeah. Well, they're up to a lot. They've been pretty in demand during the pandemic, and now with inflation on the rise. There's Molly Nicole, the CEO of the Regional Food Bank of Northeastern New York, gave the statistic that nationally, one out of six people are food insecure. But here in the Hudson Valley region, of which Sullivan is technically a part, it's more like one in five, and a lot of people have become food insecure since the pandemic or through the pandemic, and especially now with inflation kind of added on top of that. So there's been a lot more demand for the food bank services, and they just received a $10 million grant to build a new warehouse down in Orange County in the town of Montgomery. And this warehouse will sort of help provide more fresh food options to the surrounding region. It'll also just help because they were, because of all of this demand, outgrowing their current warehouse space. And it'll just help them provide food to the food insecure, which is a growing population.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like this is why we've been following this right along here. Any next steps?
The next steps are pretty much just to get that built. They were looking at some existing warehouses to during the process and weren't able to go for one of those. So they will be building this one from the ground up. They're hoping to start construction by the end of the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth. It might take about 8 months to build, they said. With what's going on in the world right now, there's the supply chain issues as well that could make things difficult. But so with all of that said, it's probably well into 2023 by the time this warehouse will be sending out food regionally.
Yeah, but that's thank you for giving me that time frame. But what's coming across to me is that they're moving right along with this. Got a $10 million grant, and they're moving forward. So that sounds good.
Yeah, and they're moving forward with it, and they're not seeing any slowdown of services in the near future. So even if this takes, say, a year to put in the ground, they're estimating that the economic impacts from COVID are going to last around 5 years. So even if more people sort of find themselves in more of a secure place, it's going to take time, and this new warehouse will still be around in time to be influential.
Yeah, there's still the need remains, and
absolutely,
even the expanded need because of the pandemic. Okay, so let's go over to Narrowsburg and the town of Tustin received, talking about, you know, everybody's getting some money here to help. Town of Tustin received a $3 million grant for repairs to its water and sewer system. How's that going?
That's going pretty well since they just got $3 million. So this is something Huston's been discussing for a while. These repairs are fairly overdue for their system. Those discussions have been happening for a very long time. I'm not finding in my notes right now how long their how long the current system has been in use. Sorry, I've just found it now. Some parts of the system have been in use for over 70 years and are very much in need of replacement or repair, particularly the town's water tower. And they've been trying to get this done for a long time, but they've been having difficulty finding grants, and they've not really been getting enough funding from their the customers of the water system. The rates for the water system were very, very low comparative to rates around them for a long time. Mm-hmm. So last year they took care of the second half of that problem. They raised rates quite substantially that local customers would have to pay for the water from the system. And now this year, just recently, they got a $3 million grant from the state to help get this project going. So they're going to planning to start with the water tower upgrades, and they're going to try and get that moving as quickly as possible to replace a bunch of outdated infrastructure and make everyone's water a lot safer and cleaner.
Okay, and then I hear there's a shakeup at a local school, or potentially a shakeup, at least a change. Superintendent of Eldred School, Dr. John Morgano, is retiring. What do we know about that? Who's taking his place?
Yeah. So over in Eldred, the shakeup is that Dr. John Morgano is retiring. He's been with the school for around 5 years, I believe. And he is leaving the position to the current junior-senior high school principal, Tracy Ferraria. And as she's moving up into the superintendent position, they're starting the search for someone to replace her. So they're sort of cycling people in and through and up, so to speak.
Okay, and what about the financial situation at the school? Is there a situation?
Well, they're sending their budget out for a vote on Tuesday, May 17. They're looking to collect, or they're looking to spend around $19 million in for the upcoming school year and levy the taxes thereof. And as well, they're trying to get an additional $1.5 million, or trying to spend an additional $1.5 million to acquire 12 66-passenger school buses and three 20-passenger school buses with handicapped access. So they're trying to modernize that part of their infrastructure, as well as just fund their own ongoing operations.
Okay, great. And is there anything else that's going on that we didn't get to?
Yeah, there's another school board election taking place on the 17th over in Sullivan West. There technically is a school board election happening in Eldred, but there's only one position on the ballot, and that one position is uncontested. So that is the fairly a foregone conclusion. But over in Sullivan West, there are three available seats. Rose Joyce Turner is running unopposed for one of the seats, but the other two seats are each being debated between two candidates. There's one seat that's being sought by both Christian Johnston and Jackie Rutledge, and there's one seat being sought by both Michael Elmar and Craig Passante. So we have candidate statements from those candidates in the River Reporter's paper and on the website. So if you're interested in school boards in the area, which local school boards have kind of become a bit of a hot topic issue a hot button issue around the area and locally and nationally even. So if you're interested in that, check out the candidates and make sure to vote on this coming May 17th.
And there'll be additional info in tomorrow's River Reporter?
There absolutely will be, right on page 7.
There you go. Well, so we can keep an eye out for that. And folks can keep an ear out for Liam Mayo this weekend when Liam's doing the headlines for us. And next week when he comes back for this weekly news roundup once again. Liam, I want to thank you for joining us on this sunny Wednesday afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Hope you get to enjoy it.
You're listening to the Local Edition. News and information keeps you connected in the Catskills of Northeast Pennsylvania. We're going to take a quick break. We'll do also a quick update from Albany, the news that's going on up there when we return. And then it's Work Shift Live.
Radio Cats.
Across the country, people are starting to think about and plan for America after Roe. What will happen? And what kind of country are we without it? This is Brian Lehrer from WNYC. Join me for a live national call-in special. My guests will include Aaron Haynes, founder of the 19th, which covers gender, politics, and policy. Let's get together and talk.
Listen live Thursday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
Okay, in more news from Albany, an activist in New York State news is basically what I'm saying. An activist is alleging that Republicans made a backroom deal with Democrats not to legally challenge the new drawn districts for the state assembly. WSKG's Vaughn Golden was in Bath, where an attorney voiced the allegation today.
Political activist Gary Greenberg alleges that Republicans engaged in a quid pro quo deal with Democrats not to challenge the state assembly maps in court. Greenberg is asking a judge to allow him to intervene in the ongoing lawsuit over New York's congressional and state Senate maps, which are being redrawn by an independent expert. Greenberg's attorney is James Walden. He voiced the allegation before a judge on Tuesday.
There was a political deal that involved a quid pro quo. That's what Mr. Greenberg started hearing when that brief was filed. He started hearing these rumors that there was a deal worked out between the Democrats and the Republicans to give the Republicans something in return for leaving the assembly districts alone.
Walden would not comment on details, but said they would come out if Greenberg is allowed to intervene in the lawsuit. Lawyers for both the Republicans and Democrats in the case denied any backroom deals. A lawyer for the Attorney General called it a conspiracy theory. In Bath, I'm Vaughn Golden, WSKG News.
Okay, and there was other big news today about the redistricting issue, and we have this update that's also from Vaughn, redistricting continuing this saga in New York State. And now we know that some candidates for state Senate and Congress will not have to collect new petition signatures to get on the ballot. WSKG's Vaughn Golden has more.
The judge overseeing the redrawing of New York's congressional and state Senate maps approved the plan submitted by the State Board of Elections Tuesday. Candidates who collected hundreds of signatures under the old maps will not have to spend time and money collecting new ones. That's as long as their old petitions were verified. New candidates may also still file petitions to get onto the ballot for the rescheduled August primaries. This would be under a new timeline beginning May 21st. That's one day after the judge's timeline to finalize the new congressional and state Senate maps. Congressional and state Senate primaries are now set to take place on August 23rd. All other primary elections will take place on June 28th. In Vestal, I'm Vaughn Golden, WSKG News.
And this is Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. And right now, it's the Local Edition. And next on the Local Edition, it's that time on a Wednesday evening where we turn our eyes to the latest information on jobs and the economy around our listening area, around the country, around the world. And for that, we turn to James B. Huntington for Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
Working 9 to 5. What a way.
So once again, right after we spoke last week, James, there's more information came out about jobs in the economy. This time it was another one of those jobs reports came out on Friday. What was in it?
Yes, it was another good one. We gained 428,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, which is about 10 times what we need to cover our shrinking population increase. We have unemployment rates at 3.6 adjusted and 3.3 unadjusted. We had people, more people on temporary layoff, more people on non-farm payroll wage pay getting less than inflation. We had lower numbers on labor force participation and the employment population ratio, but we had fewer people working part-time for economic reasons or keeping that kind of work while looking for full-time opportunities. The American Job Shortage Number, or AJSN, showed us that we can now fill about 16.1 million additional possibilities, which was down 500,000. The COVID numbers told us that we are not taking a lot of undue risks to stay on the job. The death rate is still so low right now. So what we need to really improve on is getting workers paid more so that their wages and such keep up with inflation. Otherwise, it's generally good. This number of new jobs is what's most important this time.
Right. Well, along the theme of workers wanting to be compensated, and one of the things that we've been following is the reaction of workers the last couple of years. Some people are calling it a great resignation, but then now some others are calling it a great shift. Is that correct?
Yes. This is a heavyweight economic advisor, director, telling us that it's what's really happening is that people are not leaving the workforce at this point. They are looking for jobs where they can find advancement, looking for improved opportunities, and looking for higher wages. In other words, they're quitting jobs to look for better jobs. And some people are naming low pay and lack of opportunity for quitting jobs in a new survey, so that's quite possibly what's happening now. We've already had a lot of people resigning, but right now that's not happening as much. People want better jobs, not no jobs.
Okay, well, and then along those lines, and why I've heard that only that less than 10% of Manhattan office workers are there full-time now. So is that the shift away from those types of jobs, that a shift towards working at home, or is that employers not paying people to work full-time?
Well, what it mainly is they are working a lot at home. We're now seeing that 8% of Manhattan office workers are back in the office 5 days a week, but we have 28% fully remote, and we have 38% on any given day.
Wow.
So it's fewer. We're getting two-thirds of Manhattan office employers offering workers incentives to return to the office. 43% are giving free or discounted meals. So they're trying to make the commute thing up to them, but a lot of workers are really not buying it. I'm also hearing that crime rates are concerning them, that a lot of violent crime and such is up, and that may be causing another reason for workers to want to stay home. So it's, it's we're not getting great masses going back to the office.
These must be younger office workers who weren't working in the office in the 80s. if they don't have much of a point of comparison, I guess. I'm being glib because I don't know how bad crime actually is in New York City, but that's pretty interesting there. But what impact does this have economically? Like, I mean, New York City still struggling to get back? I mean, if there's that few office workers returning to work in the offices, doesn't that impact the other businesses in Manhattan that serve that workforce?
It sure does. It hurts all the fringe things like restaurants especially and even retail stores in general. It's easy to go to work in the city and then stop for shopping or sometime either at lunch or on the way home, and less of that is happening. So it's considerable, and it's often underrated that the factors, the real economic factors of people not coming to the office are had by businesses which are not the offices themselves. So yes, we're going to see more of that, probably restaurant closings, ones that cater to employees going to work in the office. And these things do fluctuate. They're all on pendulums, as I've noted before, but it's not looking good right now for people with businesses dependent on workers coming to town.
Right, right. And now, in other aspects of the economy right now, a lot of people are concerned about inflation. And if there's one thing that Americans like less than inflation, it's higher taxes. But you're looking at something and saying these may be connected.
Yes. Well, first, we had a new inflation news release. We're down to 8.3%. That's down from 8.5% the previous month. That's not much of a decrease, but it is a decrease. It means we're either leveling off or going down, at least for now. Now, the higher taxes thing is, we know that federal income tax is indexed to inflation, but a lot of state taxes aren't, so we're having the old-time 70s bracket creep affecting people who are in particular, 16 states, which include New Jersey and New York. So right here in New York, if inflation continues and people are getting raises to cover that, some of that will be held back because their taxes will go up. And if the percentages are progressive. So it's another factor making inflation, in effect, higher than expected for people with enough income to be paying significant state income tax. So that really is a factor now.
Wow.
In a lot of places in the country, including ours.
Okay, I didn't fully understand what you were saying in the beginning. When you say that the federal tax rate pegged to inflation, that means in essence the federal tax rate compensates for inflation to avoid putting a double whammy on folks.
Yes, the levels of the brackets increase every year to account for roughly more or less inflation.
But not in certain states, which include states right here in our listening area.
The state taxes in many places do not, including New York and New Jersey.
Well, so there you go.
That is money going away from people who are paying state income taxes around here.
I'm glad you mentioned the new inflation number. Scott Horsley from NPR is reporting on All Things Considered this evening. And there's two items that got mentioned, specific products that you hear in just about any story about inflation. You're going to hear about one of these products. One of them was the price of milk. The other is the price of gas. That's something that's where people can really see the impact of inflation and other world events that are going on. But are there things that people could do to maybe not be spending so much on gas, regardless of what the price is?
Yes. Well, this was really a good reminder of some things, some classic ways of cutting down your gas usage. People may know them already, but it's worth reminding things are. And the six things I have here are lightening the weight of your car, taking garbage out of the trunk that you've been taking around with you everywhere, buying a fuel-efficient car if you have a choice. At the miles per gallon is getting to matter even more, of course. Only using the air conditioning when you need it. In this climate around here, it's relatively easy if it's close not to automatically turn on the air conditioning. Use cruise control if you have it. It smooths out ups and downs, cuts down usage. Don't idle. Do that as little as possible. And make sure your tires are properly inflated. These six things together, or whatever combination suits you, could make a significant difference, a difference which will be higher now that gas always seems to be in the fours these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I got to say, though, those are tips that those tips have been around a while. Those are things people could be doing at any time.
They come and go. People don't care about them when gas gets lower. But here's a reminder now that gas is not lower.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so that's all that. And now how about space tourism? Turn our eyes to space quickly. What's up with that?
Yes, well, we have very real things we can do now. I'm not going to talk about the future. Anybody can do that of space travel. But some of the things offered now are a balloon that will take you up to 100,000 feet in a pressurized cabin, 6 to 12-hour trip, which allows you to see, for example, the curvature of the Earth.
Oh, cool.
Other things out there will take you to 100 or 120 miles up in the air. There are three major players, and they are Bezos, Branson, and Musk. Just our trio of three musketeers of extremely wealthy men we have going right now. But you can get right now tickets for a suborbital space flight as low as $450,000.
Wow.
So it is getting sane for people who have that kind of money, and it really is possible. It's worth noting. It's not just imaginary. It's not just 5 or 10 years from now. It's now. Because of waiting lists and such, it may be 1 or 2 or 3 years, but you can actually book these things and expect that they'll happen.
Okay. I'm not sure what to make of any of that. But one thing that I do know is that sound means it's time to keep an eye on the robots, because it's a robot watch here on Work Shift Live in just the last 2 minutes of the program. James, can you give me an update of where the robots are? They aren't at the spaceport. They're at the airport?
Yes, they're at Dallas Love Field. Among other things, Love Field, as you may remember, is the smaller but still commercial airport in the Metroplex. So if somebody is not wearing a mask, they may get caught not by a person but by a robot. They have a 7-foot-tall machine named the Security Control Observation Tower, which is really a robot. And they are looking for people using facial recognition who are not wearing masks. They can contact airport security. They can bark out messages saying the likes of please put your mask on. So it's not the people doing these things now. More and more it's robots.
Observational robots. Robots doing the observing now.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on robots with Robot Watch and the latest on AI as it impacts the workforce right here on Work Shift Live, where we have the latest on jobs and the economy around the world, around our area. James B. Huntington, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners.
Okay, so that's going to do it for this edition of the Local Edition. Make sure you never miss any episode of this program by signing up for the Local Edition podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. My name's Jason. I'll be back again tomorrow evening. We'll do it all over again at 6:30. So then we got lots of great programming for you here on Radio Catskill. Stay tuned. Let's Talk Vets is coming right up with Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg. Stay tuned.
Support. for Radio Catskill comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, located in Harris and Calicoon, a member of the Garnet Health System, garnethealth.org. The River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, riverreporter.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill.